Welcome to the Connections Podcast, a podcast devoted to how Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo connect to our beloved community. I'm your host, Jack Brennan, Connections at UUSM. My guest today is Tricia Dell, currently the Vice President of our Board of Trustees. Tricia grew up in a large Irish Catholic family in Cincinnati, Ohio. She's the oldest of four and one of 36 first cousins on her mom's side of the family. That meant there were always reasons to get together, from birthdays and holidays to Friday nighters, a tradition started by her grandmother. Both the Irish and the Catholic part of Tricia's identity provided a strong sense of belonging and security throughout her childhood. And some of that continues to this day, especially with cousins. Since a Catholic education was non-negotiable from kindergarten through college, Tricia didn't have much exposure to other religious beliefs growing up. That all changed after graduating from Xavier University and finding a random job as the business director of a feminist-run Montessori daycare center whose mission was to serve a racial and socioeconomic balance of families. The exposure that she got to issues of poverty, race, and inequity turned her world upside down and shaped the direction of her life. During her 20s, she learned how to keep a small daycare center going during Reagan-era times with activities like fundraising, grant writing, and networking. After 5 years at Montessori Learning Center, Tricia began working independently, planning events and producing folk concerts for Cincinnati Folklife. Her first event was bringing the Pickle Family Circus from San Francisco to perform at a fundraiser for Cincinnati Daycare Association. At 29, she met her husband, Dan Bernstein, who was an electrical engineer. She had never met an engineer before. She introduced him to concert production, and he got her outdoors, hiking and backpacking. Shortly after they met, Dan was recruited to Applied Biosystems in Foster City, and they decided to make the exciting and romantic move to the San Francisco area. They have two daughters, Anna and Emily, who were raised at UUSM. Tricia's first job in the Bay Area was with Cadre International Folk Ballet, followed by several others before settling into nonprofit consulting and coaching. During those years, she also worked at the Stanford Graduate School of Business as a co-facilitator of the popular group and interpersonal dynamics class, affectionately nicknamed Touchy Feely by the students. She also facilitated a group in the Women in Management program. Tricia is proud that her final position before retiring in 2020 was as executive director at Homework Central. At that time, she was not active at UUSM, and it was one of the things that catapulted her back to this beloved community. That and a call from Sheila Sandow asking her to co-lead an online auction. Looking back, UUSM has played a vital role in her life. Over the course of nearly 30 years, Tricia has made dear friends and mentors that have given her love and friendship and skill sets that she wouldn't have otherwise. She is grateful. Tricia, welcome to the Connections Podcast.
Thank you.
I've been trying to snag you for the podcast for quite a while.
It's true.
And I'm thrilled that you're finally here. All right. In your bio, you mentioned a tradition of Friday nighters started by your grandmother. What are Friday nighters?
It was really cool. Every Friday night when I was young, everybody was invited to come to our house for cocktails. Cocktails was a big part of the Irish Catholic thing. The kids would run around and the adults would nibble on things, and it was just what they did. Over the years, my mom continued the tradition right up until my parents met Dan's parents, Erna and Hans,
Okay.
Jewish Holocaust survivors. They couldn't have been more different than my parents. But Ernest started coming to Friday Nighters, so it really carried over a long period of time.
Oh, that's really great. That's really nice. What were you like as a child?
I was the oldest, so I was responsible. I was, I think, too serious. Not as spontaneous and playful as I would have wanted for myself. I was a good girl. I was just a really good girl, and I volunteered, and I hung out with my grandparents. I just was responsible,
right?
I guess is the best way to put it.
You were the oldest of four. Tell us about your younger siblings.
My sister is closest in age. She's number two, and she and I are closer. Then I have my two younger brothers, and I'm also connected with them. My sister and I both had children. My brothers don't have children. They're all in Cincinnati. Yeah, I'm the only one that left Cincinnati. My parents weren't happy about me moving so far away.
Yeah.
That was tough on them.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, when my dad died a few years ago, and my mom is 89, and so my sister and my one brother really do the caretaking, have really done a good job with that.
Right.
And I've worked hard to go home a lot,
right,
to Cincinnati and visit, but it's not the same as being there. So they don't give me a hard time.
Right.
They're grateful I come home as often as I do. I call my mom at least 4 or 5 times a week. But still, I have to say I'm grateful that they don't give me a hard time. They
right.
respect that this was a life choice that I made. And I don't think they resent it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm grateful.
If I ask your younger siblings what kind of a big sister you were when they were growing up, what would they tell me?
So I cheated. When I read this question, I pinged them, all of them. The thing that 3 of 4 said was responsible and reliable and kind. My sister said driver and beer buyer.
Oh.
So
well,
I bought
I'm
the beer.
Not sure how that goes with responsible, Trisha.
And she said lifelong companion. That was sweet.
Oh, very, very. I'm not going to ask you to name all 36 first cousins. And that was just on your mom's side of the family.
That's right. Dad was an only child.
Ah. Tell our listeners more about the cousins.
I could name them all. I won't.
Of course.
But what I can do to shortcut it is say Uncle Andy and Aunt Loretta had 11. Uncle Jack and Aunt Jane had 8. Aunt Sally and Uncle Jim had 6. I could do that
right.
all the way down. We only had 4. One family lived in Cleveland and another in Washington, D.C. And the others in Cincinnati, I have cousins that I don't know well. Some of them have died, but we all know who each other are.
Right.
And then the one in my age group, I know well. And it is almost like extended, almost like siblings.
Mm-hmm.
We had these big, giant family reunions once a year when I was young. And you came together and you loved each other. It was nice. There was a sense of belonging. I felt like I belonged in this family. But that did mean towing the party line with Catholicism. We knew people that weren't Irish, but we didn't know people that weren't Catholic.
You said that was non-negotiable, your Catholic education.
Oh, yeah.
So that was just the expected thing.
You just do it.
You were a good girl. You didn't push back on that. You didn't say, I want to go to a public high school now or anything like that. Catholic.
They were paying the tuition, and for college, I guess I could have, but it was just really hard going up against them.
Right.
My parents just wanted us there, and they wanted us in Catholic education. And my dad felt stronger than my mother. At the time, I didn't have the strength or the courage, the confidence to stand up to it. I did later.
Did you want to stand up to it then, but you just couldn't bring yourself to, or was it just the accepted thing?
You know what? I didn't even want to.
Right.
Because I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
Is true. When I was questioning, I'll never forget saying to my dad, boy, I wonder, you know, gosh, if people were to get divorced, why? That's not okay with God. I just started questioning things. Oh, well, the Pope says one thing and Trisha Dell says another.
Ah, wow.
And I was
like,
okay.
Put you in your place. Yeah.
He did.
That's, wow. It sounds like one of the biggest culture shock challenges in your life was your first job after college when you were the business director of a feminist-run Montessori school. Share with our listeners what that was like.
Oh my goodness, it changed my life. I was 22. Daycare wasn't in my vocabulary. Maybe preschool, and Montessori was an elitist thing. Xavier had one of the few master's programs in Montessori in the country. There were a lot of Montessori schools, but they were all elitist except for this one. And the mission was really heartfelt. It wasn't just to get grants. They were serious. And so half of the people, half of the families did pay full tuition, which wasn't cheap. And half of the families came from Title 20, I think it was, funding, Reagan era, because it then got cut. They were single mothers mostly and lower income families. I saw the lives, I could just tear up right now. I just saw mothers and sometimes fathers picking up their children, just seeing what it was like for them and getting to know them. And it's just Reagan, my parents were big Reagan supporters. I just, all of a sudden, the policy, I just couldn't get it. That was it. Yeah. That was it for Republicanism. That was it for just a lot of the things that my parents didn't understand. It changed everything. The people, even I remember meeting my first atheist friend, somebody, and it was a friend of mine, and he was on the board of this thing, and I got to know these people well. And he just casually had said something about being an atheist, and I was like, I mean, what?
Right. Where are your horns?
Maybe you could be Protestant or something, but not atheist.
Right, right. You sure you don't want to be Baptist? Because I could go there. Oh, man. Yeah.
And at that time, I'd never even heard of Unitarian. But it did change. Because then, I didn't know what I wanted to be. I graduated from Xavier as a political science major because I loved politics. Getting this job led me naturally to my gifts, which fundraising, you know, I would have been good at sales if I cared about widgets, I think did lead me to what I care about. I went to a high school reunion several years ago, and this guy then went the very conservative Republican route, but I still liked him. We were talking about it, just how we've gone such different ways. I said, and politically, oh my goodness. And he said, Trisha, you were always a Democrat. You just didn't know it. And I thought, yeah, I did have a big heart.
Your family didn't vote for Kennedy?
I think maybe my dad did.
Yeah.
I think that might have been the only Democrat. I'll have to ask my
another mom. Irish Catholic.
I think he did, actually.
Right. Yeah, okay.
I do. I did apply for jobs before I got the Montessori job, like at Procter & Gamble, which is based in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't in my heart. It's just that big corporate thing. I don't think I interviewed well. Whereas at Montessori Learning Center in this church basement with all these people that were just so casual and their heart was in what they were doing, it appealed.
You mentioned that Dan got a job in Foster City. So it sounded like that was not long after you met.
Oh, you caught it.
Yeah. How long was that between when you met him and when you were like, sure, I'll go across the country with you?
Gosh, I can't believe you picked that up. So it's true. We met in February and we decided that we would get married in November. And because he was getting recruited and we were going out together to look at the area, but we hadn't committed to each other. It was a very awkward, me being probably less secure at the time. I knew I was not going to move because I was leaving. I knew a lot of people and I knew all the leaders. I was real involved in politics.
Sure.
So I had my own business. I knew leaders. It would be a lot to leave Cincinnati, but who wants to stay in Cincinnati? Not me. Going to San Francisco, the arts, and there was just so much there I would love to explore. I did end up saying, I can't go unless we're committed to get married. We don't have to get married this minute, but so we went back to Cincinnati to get married a year later.
Okay.
It devastated my parents, moving that far away and not being married. Took a lot of courage.
You met Dan when you were 29 mm-hmm. years old. How did you two meet?
We laugh about that. We never would have known each other in our early 20s or mid-20s, and we wouldn't have liked each other in our early 20s or mid-20s. A friend of mine that I went to college with at Xavier married a real close friend of Dan's. Friends introduced us.
Okay. And they introduced you thinking you would be a good fit.
Yeah.
Interesting. And
we're so different. So I don't know why they thought that, but they were right.
Did you have a big wedding?
My parents would have preferred a country club, but we had 100 people. Mm-hmm. We found a nice, cozy lodge outdoors somewhere with a kitchen and catered. There was a lot of my family, cousins traveled, and I knew a lot of people, but it was an interesting mix. It was a fairly big wedding.
Performed by a priest?
Oh, that was really interesting. So, the wedding was in a Catholic church.
Okay.
Right before I met Dan, I found a small Catholic church with a very liberal priest in a mixed, diverse neighborhood, social justice focused. I loved this little Catholic church, even though by then I knew Catholicism wasn't for me. I still loved that church and I loved the priest, and I wanted George to be able to do it at St. Anthony's, but really it was for my parents. Dan had also been a paramedic. He ran on his paramedic runs with a rabbi. He thought, ooh, maybe Lou could say the service with George. So we had a rabbi and a priest in a Catholic church. We did not have a mass. And we had my Uncle Ray, who's a priest, who married and baptized everybody in my family, not officiate. Lou and George officiated, but Uncle Ray, we had a place for him saying the New Testament reading, but it was a customized service that wasn't a mass in a church with a priest and a rabbi.
That's a really great story.
It's me really trying to please my family is what that was.
It sounds like, yeah.
Yeah.
Dan got a job in Foster City, which is what brought the two of you out here to the Bay Area. Did you settle coastside right away, or where did you live first then? How did all that happen?
We really had to figure out what we could afford. We rented, and we lived at 9th and El Dorado in San Mateo.
Hmm.
Lived there for years until Emily came along, second daughter. And then we moved to Redwood City and lived in Redwood City, still renting. Then when it was time for kindergarten for Anna, the older one, we just really wanted to see where we could move, and that's when we moved to the coast. First place we looked at, it was perfect, and it was cheaper on the coast, and we both loved the coast anyway.
Right.
We would go a lot, even when we lived in San Mateo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. You got married, you had your two daughters. What year was your first daughter born?
91.
91, okay. Tell us about your girls and how they were growing up. What was motherhood like?
Wow. They're very different. Anna was just always more like an adult. She enjoyed adults. Fairly sophisticated. Emily was more playful and fitting in with her friends was everything and didn't want to be around adults. They were very different from each other. Anna lives in Copenhagen. And from high school, it was just so clear. In college and master's, she was into global development and understanding the world and understanding, and now sustainability. She's landed a job in, gosh, it started with a woman's clothing brand that followed the ethical supply chain. And now she's with a company that helps brands be sustainable. When she was going to school, she went to Nicaragua and she went to Jordan. She did all kinds of work with communities of people in her training to understand the world.
Wow, that's amazing.
Emily is now in acupuncture school. She did hospitality, got a degree in hospitality, and then went into some nutrition training and then organic farming. She was piecing together. She didn't know what, but she spent the first 6 or 7 years in her 20s doing these different things. Now acupuncture, traditional Chinese medicine, is about wellness and nutrition and whole health in a lot of ways. So she's found her way and she's happy and she's solid and really proud of both of them.
Your daughters were raised at UUSM.
The first time, yeah. When we had Anna, Dan was not interested in them going to a church. I had found an Episcopal church in Menlo Park that I liked. There was integrity in ways that I couldn't get from Catholicism. I wanted to baptize Anna at this Episcopal church, and it took a lot of working through for Dan and I. He finally agreed. On the baptism day, he agreed with caveats that she would have her own choices in life. Coincidentally, it was the same day my sister's child was getting baptized by my uncle in Cincinnati. But we were having our baptism here and didn't get a phone call, didn't get acknowledgement at all. An Episcopal baptism wasn't good enough. It needs to be a Catholic baptism.
Yeah.
That was one of the most painful moments in my life. That's a big statement, but it was. I felt just deeply hurt.
Yeah.
That's where I realized I could be an atheist. I could be a Jew. I could be anything. I got coached by the priest at the Episcopal church. He helped me see that I was pleasing my parents.
Right.
And what did I want? A friend told me about a Unitarian church, and I had never heard of Unitarian churches. I went to UUSM, and Anna, the very first time I went, I was holding her,
right.
And I stood in the back and just watched.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told this story to people before. Helen Thomas, Bonnie Thomas's mother, was there, and she came up to me, and, oh, can I hold the baby? I just felt welcomed, and it was such a special thing, but I didn't join until 97. That was 92, probably.
When did you feel like you belonged there? It took you a while to join. What went into that?
I loved it so much. I loved the warmth of the people. And I also loved that the different activities and the things that happened because the people wanted them to happen, not because the priest or the bishop or this was how you have to do it.
Not top down.
It wasn't a top down thing. Yet there was ritual, and there was something that the idea of bringing my family, my parents, or anything to, I couldn't even fathom. But I did enjoy it and feel well. Oh, Matt Foyer. He was the membership guy. And I had become friends with him. And one day he brought the membership book up to me right under my face. And he said, Del, just sign this thing. I'm not going to make you stand up and say I'm a member. It was so funny.
Yeah.
So that's what happened in 97.
Dan, though.
Dan did not. But he loved it. He came to all the auctions.
That was what I was going to ask. He was somewhat involved.
Every time the girls.
As he is now in that way.
Like, yeah.
He comes and
people knew him.
Right.
And the girls, if they were doing it in a play and if they were anything they did, he was there.
Tell our listeners about some of the roles you've had at UUSM over the years.
Dan reminded me, and I'm really proud of this. I started Aging Disaging. And it was because Sherlyn Kissner, who died before you came here, came up to me. She was in her 80s. And she approached me, and we didn't know each other very well, but she knew me. I think I was more visible. She said, there's this book, Aging to Saging, and it's by this rabbi. I can't remember his name. But it's about aging with, not grace, but aging in a smart kind of way. That we're, it's not just bingo.
Right, right.
There's a group. You can get trained. And it's in Indiana, and she wanted me to be the facilitator of this aging, disaging process that she had learned about. And so ultimately I did. I went to Indianapolis, and I got trained in this thing. We started the first group, and it was Richard Davis, and it was a lot of people who've since died.
Yeah.
I did it for 2 or 3 years, I think. And then Barb Dumond picked it up, and different people picked it up. It grew into women, and now I'm in an aging to saging group with younger people. I did that, and I feel good about that. I was on a ministerial search committee for Vail, and I've run pledge drives and auctions. And oh, I had your job, Jack.
Did you?
I was the membership. It was called membership coordinator. I would meet people and go to people's houses and talk to them, and they would join. And the people that I signed up, just a few, because I remember sitting in their living rooms, Connie Spierig, Carol Hewen, the Bertolays, Ann and Reba, Karen and Sean. It was a long time ago. UUCC, during COVID, had a shared pulpit class. I took that shared pulpit class, and they roped me in. They, you know, and Tovis taught, but it was through UUCC. They sponsored it. And I really had not done a lot of pulpit work before that. That was an important involvement that came from them.
Handling the auction. How did that happen? I mean, how did...
Sheila.
A lot of questions when you ask, how did that happen? The answer starts with Sheila.
I know. I had not been active, but I was in a saging group. Sheila was in that saging group.
Mm.
And I think it was one of the steps to coming back was like being in the saging group, because I really wasn't going to services regularly.
Right. I wanted to ask you about that too, because you apparently had become less involved.
A lot less involved.
Before that conversation with Sheila, why did you become less involved?
I was burnt out.
Mm.
I was trying to think about when I stepped back, because I kept thinking, I'm going to take a little sabbatical, maybe 6 months. And I think that was like in 2008 or 9, before Vail left, whenever that was. I was burnt out. I was just full out for years.
Right.
But I did pop back. And was reminded of why UUSM was important to me. I would come to a memorial, Bob Dufour.
Mm-hmm.
I would come and Linda Jacobs. It would remind me how important this community was.
Right.
Then I would do a little something, and then I'd stop. And then I joined the saging group. And then Sheila called and said, you run an online auction or co-facilitate. An online auction. And then that led to Becky and I, and that's what really brought me back.
I thought that was really interesting. Your last job before you retired was as the executive director of Homework Central.
Right.
How did that job come about first?
So I had been a donor for years and years of Homework Central, and Matt was involved. Matt and I knew each other well. Homework Central was at this pivotal moment. They were having a leadership transition. The person who had been the executive director for many, many years was leaving. So I did have some expertise where I came in as an interim to kind of help regroup. And then I think actually became the ED at some point, but it was still for a short period of time. And that felt really good to be able to be helpful for Homework Central, which is an important.
Had Dan continued to work for that same company that brought him out here?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, no, no. He went startup hopping.
Right. Did you ever think during any of those times in between job hopping that you would go somewhere else?
Leave the Bay Area?
Mm-hmm.
There were many times, believe it or not, where I thought we should move back to Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
But that was to be able to afford a house and be near grandparents. And I thought, I've had enough therapy that I can have boundaries. And the girls could be near cousins. And oh my goodness, that would have been a mistake.
Right.
That would have been a big mistake. I'm glad that didn't happen. I don't enjoy the Silicon Valley intensity here.
Mm-hmm.
And what the pressure that puts on our children.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost of living. And right now, I even sometimes think, should we go somewhere else?
Mm.
I don't think we can bring ourselves to leave.
Right.
Especially from the coast. It's just such a special place.
Beautiful. Just so beautiful here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Back to Sheila's call. Sheila called you about doing the auction. And how did she talk you into that? Like,
I said, my instant reaction was, you've got to be kidding. But the church had always done live.
Right.
And oh my gosh, the organization of those auctions was just, for me, painful.
Were you involved in those live auctions
sure.
before?
An online auction made the most sense to me. And so I thought, if somebody with a complementary skill set to me, that had skills that I don't have, would agree to do it with me, I would consider it.
Okay.
And it did seem like an online auction would be easier and interesting, and it would bring UUSM up into the age, right?
Right, it's just, right.
She had thought about Becky, and she approached Becky. I didn't know Becky. I had heard of Becky. I knew who she was, but we weren't friends. Then Becky and I talked, and then we hit it off, and it just went from there.
And then we lost our auction team, right? Because you and Becky then...
Oh, after 2 years.
decided...
Yeah. We're working on it. What it's going to be is we now have a stewardship committee, which is something that I feel really passionate about, which nothing to do with the auction. I just have felt really passionate. That's a huge gaping, missing hole in UUSM. Diane Russell is extraordinary. She's
yes.
now the head of stewardship. The auction does belong in the stewardship committee. We're talking about a part of the stewardship charter would be making sure there's auction chairs.
Oh, nice.
And so that makes complete sense. So this is just a part of the transition
right.
that UUSM is in right now, that we're trying to figure places for things that make sense rather than always desperately, who's going to chair the auction next year?
Right. You and Becky, after doing the auction a couple of times,
twice.
Online auction, yeah. Then you decided to move into these other roles as president and vice president of the board. And lucky for you, it has been just smooth sailing with no bumps in the road whatsoever. There
smooth
really hasn't
silk.
Been much for you to do, has
no,
there?
No. We could just do the auction also, actually. We ought to just do it.
You should. You should in your spare time. You stepped into this maybe not knowing, I think, at the time you agreed that this was going to be such a tumultuous time for UUSM.
I know.
And did you? You knew it was,
I knew.
Crystal ball? Or
Well, it was already happening.
Well, sure. By the time you took the office, yes. But did you know it when you agreed? I was thinking that...
Oh, you're right. I came on before Becky. I came on midterm because somebody left. I don't remember what happened. But Brian Kletch and I came at the same time in December.
Mm-hmm.
Then Ben didn't leave until the following March.
Right.
So no, I didn't know that.
Right.
I did know UUSM is a nonprofit person. I could read the tea leaves. So I knew things weren't in good shape. Mm-hmm. With this, since the auction, I had reconnected on a deeper level and I was retiring. And I thought, I wonder if I, this is me talking to myself, could be useful, mm-hmm. could use my skill set to really make a difference here. That's why I did it. I would then have the time. And I thought, this could be meaningful.
Yeah, that's and great. It has been. I mean, yeah. Without your leadership, I can't imagine going through this year. You really have used your skill set in this unbelievably productive and in a blessing sort of way. That's been just so vital to our very continuation. I'm so glad that you and Becky both made that decision to give up a couple of years, which is basically what you have been doing. I mean, I know it's so much more time consuming, I bet, than even you realized going in.
Right. It's been hard because, I mean, I couldn't have done it without her and she couldn't have done it without. We say that right. All the time. Yeah. And it's made it more work because it's been easier, but it's because sure. We have each other. It did turn out to be more because we were capable of more because we had this complementary skill set. She pushed things I would never have done. I pushed things she wouldn't have done. And we just did it.
Right.
But it was more meaningful because it wasn't always so depleting, although there have been times where it's been depleting, for sure.
Right.
And then we have to step back and accept not doing things in the perfect way.
Right.
And screwing up and just saying, okay, that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of screw-ups.
If you had a magic wand and you could grant three things to UUSM right now, what would those three things be?
So one would be that we would continue with just amazing leaders stepping up. It is starting to happen. Not just Becky and I, not just people on the board, but an example of Diane on the stewardship committee and Kathy Kinner and pastoral care. There's many. I don't want to name names because there's...
You'll leave somebody out.
I'll leave people out. But it's like people are stepping up in leadership capacity. I think magic wand, that just keeps happening. Right. People that think they can't or don't have the skills, but say, I can help here and do it. That we as a congregation just magically get, it's not going to be magic, it's going to be this transitional year, get clarity about who we are and what we want to do. I don't think we're clear about that right now. When we're clear about that and we've got leadership stepping up, then more people, you know, with you and your magic and your role, you can't do it alone. More people will come who share values.
I think so.
We'll have this infrastructure, we'll have the leadership, we'll have the mission that inspires us all, and the people, and then the resources, the fundraiser in me says, because we got to have it.
Right.
It doesn't sound spiritual, but sorry, got to have it.
No margin, no mission.
Yep.
We are going to wrap this up with quick hitters. I'll ask a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
You give me an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. What's your favorite nighttime snack?
Tortilla chips. Salt. I just need a handful. Not every night, but sometimes I just want a little salt.
And nothing with it.
Mm-mm.
What's the best advice you ever got?
Oh, I can take this out of what I've already told you, is when Dan and I decided to get married, he's one of three and his other two siblings were getting married in a 6-month period.
Wow.
That was when Dan and I were thinking about getting married. And so we thought, okay, we can just wait until the following year. And my parents, my mother especially, flipped. Here I was away, living in sin, da da da.
Right.
And Dan said, you need to decide between what they want and what you want. And I decided we're going to get married next year. It was the smartest, it was the best advice. I just grew as a person got a backbone.
Right.
It was really important. And then once I did that, Dan then said, how about December 30th? And we had it in the year my parents wanted. Last day of the year. Okay. Sorry.
Good. Yeah, that's a good little compromise.
What kind of things keep you up at night?
Oh, my goodness. Everything. I'm an intense person. I feel deeply, and I think it could be anything. As I've gotten older, I meditate more, and I'm learning how to chill so that every night is not about ruminating. But there's nothing in particular. It's what's ever going on.
What's the most used app on your phone?
It's every day I pop around, right? It's the text app. It's the email, you know, it's Gmail. It's the news. It's Facebook Messenger, because that's where my daughter and grandbaby Max, I talked to them on video on that app.
You didn't really talk about Max.
Max.
Do you have anything you'd like to say about Max?
Max. She just sent me 5 videos. Each one is like 10 seconds. And the other one is 11 seconds. And the other one is 15 seconds. And he's walking.
Oh, wow.
It's so cute. I can hardly stand it. He learned to clap. And I forgot that clapping is something you've got to learn.
What was the best birthday celebration you ever had?
I think I was turning, I don't know if it was 40 or 50, but Dan arranged for my sister Nancy to come to town.
Oh, nice.
And he arranged for a spa at the Ritz and an Airbnb somewhere else on the coast for she and I to go. And Nancy has an autistic son, so, and 2 other sons as well, but for her to get away is a very big deal. It was just very special.
That's wonderful. What are you reading right now?
So I just finished Light Pirates, which was recommended by Reverend Penny Nixon, the dystopian book about a small town in Florida. It was good. I liked it. And now I haven't started my next one yet, but I think I'm going to read Beloved.
Oh.
Toni Morrison. I've not read.
You've not read it?
Mm-mm.
Mm. That's a good one. If you had to live in another country, what country would you pick?
Denmark.
Of course. I didn't even think of that when I put that question there, but of course that's what you were going to say.
But not and just because Anna's there.
Anna lives there. And Max lives.
And Max and Nikki. And so, but it's a country that works. It just works. The system and the infrastructure. And there's a lot I like about it.
What's your favorite fruit?
Fuji apple.
Fuji apple.
Organic Fuji apple. Every morning.
What superpower do you wish you had?
I wish I could speak clearer than I do. What I have in my head and what I know, and being able to say it in a really clear, succinct way.
Hmm.
I just feel like I'm missing something there. And also, listening in a way that people feel heard. I tend to jump around, and I just want to be a really outstanding listener.
Okay. What's your favorite local charity?
Puente. Hmm. Puente is in Pescadero. They were a client for a little while, and they just are...
What do they do?
Extraordinary social service agency, because Puente is rural. And a lot of farm workers and no services. And so this agency has just put the people there and their needs on the map. It's a lot of advocacy, a lot of lobbying, a lot of care.
And what's the best religion?
I think whatever speaks to your soul. My personal experiences, I think it's just got to speak to you in a deep way. What the values are, or what the principles are, or what the dogma is. I don't think anybody can say that for anybody else.
Thanks, Tricia. I so appreciate your taking the time to talk to me for the UUSM Connections podcast. This has been really great. I hope it was not as scary as you thought?
Nope, not as scary as I thought. And you did a really good job of asking the right questions. And oh my goodness, I talked about a lot more than I thought I would. Thank you.
Thank you. Many thanks also to our growing audience of listeners. Let me know what you think about the podcast, connections at uusanmateo.org. Keep making connections. All right.